It's cold in here. Okay, great. Good morning, everybody. Hi, my name's Jackie. It's lovely to be back. This is, I think, my third time visiting with you all. Has anyone been here and I spoke before? Yeah, no, I wouldn't come back either. Yeah, good. So I've been a therapist. Oh, don't do that again. Back here. I've been a therapist and a coach for a long time. As a therapist for about 30 years. I've been a professional coach for about 25. So I've done lots of hours in listening to human beings grapple with being a human being. You know what I'm saying? You ever notice this isn't the easiest thing, putting on this human suit, is it? So I've listened to people grapple with the big questions. You know, what am I here for? What am I going to do with my life? What's my purpose? What's this all for anyway? And I really feel like I understand it. So lucky for you, I'm going to tell you. Aren't you glad you got up this morning? Right? No, I really do feel like I have a solid understanding of what we're all here for, what we're doing together, and it's simply this. At one point, before we decided to put on our human suit, we were just in ethereal nature. We were spirit. We were just one in the God self, in the etheric energy of the universe, and then at some point, somebody had the bright idea to incarnate. Hey, let's become a human. And we're all like, yeah, let's do that. And then whoosh, here we are in human form. And we forgot. We forgot that we were one with God, that we were, in fact, as God in our etheric nature. Can you resonate with that? Like, there was a you before you were born. And so what if what we're here for is to grow in our energetic consciousness back to the divinity from which we came? We were one in energetic spirit, we incarnated, and what we're here to do is once again rejoin in energetic consciousness as God. Not as that yummy, 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 yummy mind. As God. In our Christ nature, our Christ consciousness. When you put on that cloak, doesn't it just feel like, oh, yeah, that makes sense. So I've taken that concept and really grappled with it in my life, and I came up with this notion of what is mine to do in this world? It is to make my life a living prayer. You know, people say, oh, Jackie, what's your spiritual practice? What do you do? What do I got to do to grow spiritually? Well, yeah, spiritual practice is great, but if you're spending an hour a day in spiritual practice and 23 hours a day being an idiot as a human being, it's not going so well. It's those 23 hours that I want you to start grappling with. Right? Albert Einstein is quoted as having saying, I want to know the mind of God. Everything else is the details. Isn't that great? I want to know the mind that created the universe. I want to know the creative potential of life itself. Everything else is the details. What I'm going to eat, how I'm getting to work, where I'm going to live, who I'm going to marry, how I'm going to raise my kids. All of that stuff that takes all of our thought energy, what if that is just the comedy, the drama, the suspense, the entertainment of our lives, but in fact the real purpose of our lives is to know and be and live as the mind of God? Doesn't that get you up in the morning? Here's a spiritual teacher, Sai Ma, who I've followed for years, and I went and heard her speak once in Albany, New York, I think. It's all random places. Anyway, and she said something during that talk that really struck me. She said, you have to grow until you want God more than anything. I was like, whoa. So let's just imagine, right, we go down, like, downtown Bowie, and we, like, gather up 100 people, and we say, what do you want more than anything? somehow I don't think I want God more than anything is going to make the top 10 list. Right? So where is our focus? If I ask you, what do you want more than anything? Would it leap to mind? I want God more than anything. I want to know the mind of God. Probably not. But Einstein said, everything else, the money, the satisfaction, the peace of mind, everything else is just the details. So that's what I want us to grapple with today. How do we move from this experience in our human suit, getting all worried about the human things that we worry about, to make this shift, to create ourselves as people who are making our lives a living prayer? That your spiritual practice is your conscious evolution as a human being. That's what I want to grapple with. I'm going to teach three principles about that, and let me tell you what they are. You can start grappling with it a little bit. It's think consciously. Interesting notion right there. We'll come back to it. Think consciously, think creatively, and think lovingly. Okay, so let's break that down a little bit. First one, think consciously. How often are you thinking consciously? Right? Now, in terms of thinking consciously, what I'm referring to is actually having the capacity to notice what is happening in your yama yama mind and choosing to direct it toward God thought, God consciousness. The God within you. So to think consciously, there's a great quote in A Course in Miracles that says this: you think that you're responsible for what you do, but not for what you think. Right? How many of you think that? I'm responsible for what I do, but not for what I think. I can't help it. How many of you have said that? I can't help it. It's just the way I think. Well, how's that going for you? So the quote goes on to say, the truth is, you are responsible for what you think because it is at the level of thinking that gives rise to what you do. Y'all know that quote from A Course in Miracles? You believe that you are responsible for what you do, but not for what you think. The truth is, you are responsible for your thinking because it is at the level of thought that gives rise to what you do. So what do I mean, being responsible for your thinking? What I mean by that is there's a difference between this yummy, 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 what going on in your mind, and being able to consciously use your thought. In fact, I've made up a word to distinguish between thinking and the neurological processes that go on in your head all the time. I created a word called mentation. Isn't that a great word? It's not a word. You can't find it anywhere. I made it up. I don't care. I do that. Mentation. Mentation is just that, that constant mental dialogue in your head, the opinions, the judgments, the comparisons, the upsets, the dramas, the worries, the what ifs. All of that that's going on in your head is not thinking. In fact, when you start thinking consciously, it looks a little bit more like this. Oh gosh, my son last night, he went out for kind of his first night of a formal affair. He's 13. He went to his first bat mitzvah. In fact, he had two of them. And then 5 minutes before he's going to leave the house, somebody texts and says, oh, can Nathan sleep over after the parties tonight? And I'm like, So I'm going there, right? It's my little boy. It's his first time to be out, and he's all dressed up, and he's all that, and he's 13. Got, what all that's like. He's got all the girls. And anyway, so I'm like, okay, am I going to let my thoughts think me? Oh, I don't know about that, because, he's been going to a party before, and I don't really know these people, and should he really sleep over there? And I don't know, can I really trust him, and who are they anyway? Blah, 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 blah. My thoughts were thinking me. You see that? Automatic, without any intervention, I'm like, okay, hold up. What are you speaking on tomorrow? That's what it looks like over here. Right, your thoughts are thinking you. There's another choice here. He's his own soul. He's his own being. And I got no reason other than the 15 reasons that I can make up in my mind to not trust him. And my job is to grow him up and set him free. So I don't know how he is. I haven't seen him yet this morning because he had a sleepover last night. But do you get that? Your thoughts are thinking you, and when your thoughts are thinking you, you have no freedom. Take that in. When your thoughts are thinking you, you have no freedom. You're just off in that drama that you're making up in your mind. The whole thing of why I would have said no last night was just stuff I was making up. That's what we're doing all the time. We are just making stuff up. And then we wonder why we're not happy with the way our life is. If you're going to make stuff up, make up better stuff. You have no freedom when your thoughts are thinking you. Disharmony in your thinking will create disharmony in your being. And disharmony in your being will create disharmony in your life. You will not experience peace of mind by living that way. A lot of my teaching comes from 1 Thessalonians 5, 16 through 18, around this make your life a living prayer. 1 Thessalonians 5, 16 through 18, and it says this: rejoice always, pray without ceasing, in all things give thanks. Now you're all like shaking your head, like, yeah, and I'm going to follow you home. What am I going to see? And the one in that verse that particularly caught my attention was pray without ceasing. What does that mean? Am I praying now? Are you? Is this prayer? Maybe it is. This is how we make our life a living prayer, by being conscious of what we're thinking and pray without ceasing. In unity, we say our thoughts are prayers. So do you know anybody that lives this way? Rejoice always, pray without ceasing, in all things give thanks. You know, I was really blessed as a child to actually be raised by someone who was very much like that. My grandmother didn't raise me, but you know what I mean. Raised by my mom, but my grandmother was a big part of that. Oh yeah, you all know that. Very, very blessed. She was an amazing woman. Grace Woodside was her name. And we lived in a very, very small town, rural area of upstate New York, and she was the school librarian, so everybody knew Grandma Grace, and everybody, she lived on the corner by the school, and she made cookies and pies, and so, you know, and she had the big front porch, you know, the old days, you have a big front porch, and everybody'd be out. Anyway, it's really beautiful. And she was a lovely gal, and I'll tell you, she went through an awful lot in her life. When I was a little kid, my dad was her oldest son, and unfortunately, he was killed in a car accident when I was really young. So Grandma lost her oldest son, and the town rallied around her and around my family. It was really lovely. It's nice to be in a rural area for things like that. But then crazy, right? 6 months later, her youngest son, my Uncle Harry Alfred, was also killed in a car accident. 6 months' time, her oldest son, her youngest son, like that. Harry Alfred, fiance, had a beautiful fiance, athletic, strapping guy in college, just really wonderful guy. And, you know, our family was, you know, we kind of knew a lot of people, so it was a big deal in our community. And I watched my grandmother just take her grief, and instead of going within and, you know, shutting out people, just throwing her love into helping my mom raise us three kids because she had lost her husband, and just stepping out into the community. It was amazing. 6 months later, her husband was killed in a car accident. Crazy, right? You can't make this stuff up. Yeah. Oldest son, youngest son, husband, all in 9 months. In a tiny, tiny little town. It kind of became my family's legacy in a lot of ways. 25 years later, I met someone in Boston, and she's like, oh, I'm from upstate New York. I was like, no, I'm from upstate New York, because it's real northern New York, rural area. And we kind of looked at each other, because that's what you do when you're from upstate New York. She's like, really, really? And she was from my grandmother's town. And she's like, oh, that's awesome. What's your last name? I said, oh, Woodside. I'm Jackie Woodside. And her face dropped. She's like, oh, I'm sorry. I laughed. I said, that was 25 years ago. It's okay. But that, you know, that, I mean, that's an intense thing, right, for my grandmother to go through. Now, what would people think it would look like? But see, she was thinking consciously. She was thinking consciously. She's like, I'm not going to. Oh, Butch said last week, Reverend Mosley, I watched his talk to prepare for my talk today. He said last week, this is so good, it fits into my talk so well. that we have to use our outer circumstances as a way to reinforce that our awakening to the kingdom of heaven consciousness within us. Now, how many of you would go through an experience like that and be like, oh yeah, I'm awakening to my kingdom of Christ consciousness within me? Make your life a living prayer. Think consciously. Second, think creatively. My favorite teaching in unity is the metaphysical trinity. And honestly, I will pet peeve, I don't think we teach it enough. Tell Butch that I said that. Have him do a series on the metaphysical trinity. So for those of you who haven't been exposed to it yet, you know in unity, we take traditional scripture, traditional Christian thought, and we interpret it through the lens of metaphysical teaching. So the Holy Trinity, the metaphysical trinity in the unity movement, is mind, idea, and expression. Yeah, I heard it over there. So Butch has taught it, huh? Yeah, he's good. That's good. Mind, idea, and expression. Mind, not like your yamma yamma mind. We got that cleared up, right? Not that one. The mind of God. I want to know the mind of God. I want to know the animating life force energy that creates everything. Look around this room. Every single thing in this room originated in divine mind. Isn't that mind-blowing? Blows my mind. So that's the first thing we got to get. Mind, when you hear the metaphysical trinity, it is not your individual mind. It is, I want to know the mind of God. I want to know the mind that's the creating force of life itself. Devote yourself to that until you understand it. Test and prove, says the Lord. How much are you testing your faith? How much are you testing these principles? I work with it every day. My most recent one, I test and prove all the time. My most recent one is so funny. So I'm a basketball player. Yes, I am a little bit on the senior side. I play women's seniors basketball. And I just moved here to this area from Massachusetts. And in Massachusetts, I played on the Massachusetts Miracles. Yes, it is a miracle that we are still playing ball at our age. But we're pretty darn good at it for women our age. Anyway, so when I moved here to D.C., I mean, it's silly, but one of my biggest losses was, like, I lost my team. I lost my girls. And for any of you who've been on a team or enjoy athletics, you really get, even at my age, like, that's something that was really important to me. So I've been going to local basketball here and there, and I kind of met some of the teams. But we've got nationals every 2 years, and this summer is nationals, the National Senior Games. Any of you don't know about it, go home and look it up. You take nothing else away from this talk. I just think it's the coolest thing. The National Senior Games is this organization of sports where seniors 50 and older get together every 2 years and do competitions, and I play basketball. So I was really bummed to not go to nationals this year. So I'm like, look, do I believe in spiritual principle or not? It doesn't have to be like this big life-changing thing that you're taking on. So I took it into prayer and meditation, affirmation, visualization. I started thinking creatively, using the spiritual power of imagination, seeing the end in mind. And then I went to practice Friday night in Falls Church, Virginia. This is all new to me. I'm pretty new in this area. Falls Church and the Nova Women, Northern Virginia Women's Basketball, one of the teams walked up to me and said, Jackie, our team met last week. We'd like to invite you to be on our team. We're going to Nationals. Can you go with us? Thank you, God, right? Now, look, that might be like, yeah, you know, Jackie, get serious. Like, that's a basketball team. But no, this is like a big thing, right? Something that I value, something that's important. It's part of my human expression, my identity. We are here to enjoy that. And, you know, I have to say, that's what I watched my grandmother do, is take in this sense of thinking, being able to think creatively, understanding that our thoughts become prayers and our thoughts become things in her strength and how she lived in her life. So thinking creatively, when there's something that you want to express in your life, it's your spiritual duty to test and prove and practice that. One of probably the most profound experiences of my life. So how many of you have had, like, you know, this thing where you catch this idea from the mind of God, right? So there's the mind of God, and then the idea gets given to you the individual idea. Like for me in that example, it was basketball. But the individual idea, and then, and you get it, right? You get this inspiration. You get this, like, this is the thing I really want to do. It could be art. It could be a relationship. It could be a self-expression in work. I don't know, but you know what I mean, right? You get that from the mind of God. And then what happens? Where does the metaphysical trinity break down? It's not the mind of God. It's not you catching the divine idea. It's what? Expression. What happens between catching the idea and the expression? What happens? No, that's a question. What happens? Excuses. Yeah, what else? Doubt. Yeah, right? I'm glad I'm not the only one. And the rest of you aren't just aren't telling the truth. That's all right. But that's what, so you've got the divine idea. And you know, you understand that it's coming from God. You feel that inspiration, spirit within. You feel that enthusiasm, entheos, the God within. You know that this is yours to do, and you sit back. How do I know that so well? Because it's what I did for 10 years. I was a full-time therapist, mental health consultant, and I knew beyond a shadow of a doubt that what was mine to do was be a spiritual teacher and to write my books and to just use my life as my message on a bigger platform, on a bigger scale than just one-to-one, hour-to-hour, as a therapist and a coach. And I, in fact, had a mission statement for 10 years before I told anyone about it. Because I was afraid. What will they think? I had doubts. And all the, you know, the one, I'll be destitute. I'll be homeless. How many of you have that? Oh, I'll just, you know, I'll just end up homeless. Oh, I did that. Not this time. But you can survive anything. It's just, it's always going to show up to support you. Support you by giving you the fear. Giving you that, keep it the same. You feel safe when things are the same. Mind, idea, expression. So what happened for me was I was at a Unity Church in Amesbury, Massachusetts, about 11 years ago, and our minister, the Reverend Shipley Allinson, she's a little sprite of a woman, but the force of nature behind her. She's a powerhouse minister. Just love that woman, a good friend of mine. And she was giving a talk, and I have no idea what the talk was about, but this is what I heard from the Gnostic Gospel of Thomas. If what is within you comes through you, it will save you. And if what is within you does not come through you, it will destroy you. And I was like, wow. I'd been watching her speak and give talks for, I don't know, probably 5-10 years at that point. And that was the day that I knew that what wanted to come through me, to think creatively, what wanted to come through me was starting to destroy me. Now, I don't mean, you know, I was like doing stupid, well, I was probably doing a lot of stupid stuff, but anyway, what I mean is it's destroying your spirit. Thoreau wrote, most men lead lives of quiet desperation and die with their songs still in them. That was me. I had a fine life. It all looked good, you know, but there was this place inside of me. So it was in the next 6 months that I closed my therapy practice and went out full-time as a speaker, author. I don't recommend it. I cut off my income stream, you know. It's either real faith or real stupidity, combination of both. But that's where you've got to grapple. So when you think about thinking creatively, first of all, you have to understand not your mind, the mind of God, giving you that divine inspiration and ideas. Charles Fillmore, the co-founder of the Unity Movement, says ideas are God's currency. Getting that idea, but then moving that idea forth through you, what comes through you will save you. What you do not bring forth through you will destroy you. Some of you are really getting it right now, that you came here today with some area of your life that you know is working you, and you've been like, yeah, not now. Not me. Not now. It's time. You can. We need you. And the last one, think lovingly. Because all of the best thought in the world is never going to take root and grow unless you bring the energy of your heart chakra, the energy of love, forth through and as you. I read this, this past week I read part of the autobiography of Billie Jean King, and she was writing about when she was getting older in her career, but still had real aspirations for, you know, winning Wimbledon or winning a doubles tournament or, you know, still wanting to compete. And she said, the only way that I could go on is if I decided I had to love every single thing about this game. I had to love the jitters. I had to love the bad calls.
I had to love the nervous chatter in the locker room. I had to love my aching knees and my joints and my muscles. I had to love all of it. Bringing forth the energy of your heart chakra into that thing, that creative idea, is how you move forth with manifestation. I like to do a meditation where I take that thing that I want to create. The most recent one was the basketball team. Bring that into my mind's eye and then do this, this beautiful meditation of the infinity symbol around my third eye, the center of ideas, down across my throat chakra, the center of expression, into the heart chakra, and back up. It's the marriage of mind and heart that gives offspring of your God self on earth. Catching the divine idea, bringing love to it. And I can't say enough, my grandmother, again, was my lesson in that. Grandma Grace, 9 years after she had been widowed, and, you know, we'd kind of gotten on to our new normal in life, and she's just such a lovely gal, involved in the community, doing lots of things. And she had this, you know, good friend of hers, her college roommate, Janet, fell ill with cancer. And again, Grandma was just devastated by it. But Janet was an amazing woman. And as it became clear that she was not going to make it, that she was going to make her transition, she said to her husband, "Harold, you're a good man, and you're better with a woman by your side. And I know somebody. Grace Woodside is a good woman. She's had a lot of tragedy in her life, a lot of heartache. She deserves to be happy. Look, when I'm gone, go find Grace. Call on her. She'd make a good companion for you." Don't you think we need to call on one another a little more often? Remember when we used to do that in text, in FaceTime? You just call on people. You're like, "Hey, I'm coming over," right? So sure enough, Janet made her transition. Harold waited 3 months, appropriate time that he fell for his mourning. And then he called up my grandmother and he said, "I'd like to call on you." Now, if my grandmother were thinking with her circumference rather than her center, remember Reverend Mosley said that last week? You have at your center, the core of your being, the core of your knowing, your God consciousness, your kingdom within, but the circumference, right? That ego saying, no. What would she do? She'd be like, "Oh, what'll people think of me going out with my college roommate's husband?" Or, "I'm not going down that road again. I've had enough heartache, thank you very much." But in her wisdom, thinking lovingly, she said, "Yeah, sure. Why don't you do that?" And she called me up. She's like, "You won't believe this. Janet's husband called me up, and he wants to call on me." And I was like, go for it. Are you kidding me? And inside, I was like, "Who is he? What's he doing?" Well, he did call on her, and I don't know how many weeks later they were dating and how many months after that they had a beautiful little wedding in Grandma's living room with the family around, and they had a beautiful life together. And I tell you these stories because I know that there's something inside of you that wants to get manifest, and that perhaps you've had heartache, you've had difficulty, you've had failures, you've had places where you didn't want things to turn out a certain way. But here's the truth, Romans 8:28, life is always unfolding for your good. All things work together for good. All things work together for good. All things work together for good. If you can stand in that knowing, stand in that belief, and then weave this through, pray without ceasing. Pray without ceasing. Have that be your mantra and engage the metaphysical trinity, God's mind, your idea, your life expression, all wrapped into thinking consciously, thinking creatively, thinking lovingly. It's just the path of miracles. It will open up your life in ways that you have not yet been able to tell. I promise you, because I've lived it in my own life. 10 years now, I've been a full-time spiritual teacher, author, traveled all around the world doing this. It's like crazy. I get paid to do this. Not much, but I get paid to do this. The metaphysical trinity is ours to use. And in fact, it's our duty. Make your life a living prayer. Let's take this into meditation together, shall we?